Chapter 34 of the Second World War. Narvik.
For many generations, Norway, with its homely, rugged population, engaged in trade, shipping, fishing, and agriculture, has stood outside the turmoil of world politics. Far off were the days when the Vikings had sallied forth to conquer or ravage a large part of the then-known world. The Hundred Years' War, the Thirty Years' War, the wars of William III and Marlborough, the Napoleonic convulsion, and later conflicts had left Norway, though separated from Denmark, unmoved and unscathed. A large proportion of the people had hitherto thought of neutrality and neutrality alone. A tiny army and a population with no desires except to live peaceably in their own mountainous and semi-arctic country now fell victims to the new German aggression. It had been the policy of Germany for many years to profess cordial sympathy and friendship for Norway. After the previous war, some thousands of German children had found food and shelter with the Norwegians. These had now grown up in Germany, and many of them were ardent Nazis. There were also a Major Quisling, who with a handful of young men had aped and reproduced in Norway on an insignificant scale the fascist movement. For some years past, Nordic meetings had been arranged in Germany, to which large numbers of Norwegians had been invited. German lecturers, actors, singers, and men of science had visited Norway in the promotion of a common culture. The deed of infamy and treachery now performed may take its place with the Sicilian Vespers and the massacre of St. Bartholomew. The king, the government, the army, and the people, as soon as they realized what was happening, flamed into furious anger. But it was all too late. German infiltration and propaganda had hitherto clouded their vision and now sapped their powers of resistance. Major Quisling presented himself at the radio, now in German hands, as the pro-German ruler of the conquered land. Almost all Norwegian officials refused to serve him. The army was mobilized and at once began, under General Ruger, to fight the invaders pressing northward from Oslo. Patriots who could find arms took to the mountains and the forests. The king, the ministry, and the parliament withdrew first to Hamar, 100 miles from Oslo. The peninsula of Norway is nearly 1,000 miles long. It is sparsely inhabited, and roads and railways are few, especially to the northward. The rapidity with which Hitler effected the domination of Norway was a remarkable feat of war and policy and an enduring example of German thoroughness, wickedness, and brutality. The Norwegian government, hitherto in their fear of Germany, so frigid to us, now made vehement appeals for succor. It was from the beginning obviously impossible for us to rescue southern Norway. Almost all our trained troops, and many only half-trained, were in France. Our modest but growing air force was fully assigned to supporting the British Expeditionary Force, to home defense, and rigorous training. All our anti-aircraft guns were demanded 10 times over for vulnerable points of the highest importance. Still, we felt bound to do our utmost to go to their aid, even at violent derangement of our own preparations and interests. Narvik, it seemed, could certainly be seized and defended with benefit to the whole Allied cause. Here the King of Norway might fly his flag unconquered. Trondheim might be fought for, at any rate as a means of delaying the northward advance of the invaders until Narvik could be regained and made the base of an army. This, it seemed, could be maintained from the sea at a strength superior to anything which could be brought against it by land through 500 miles of mountain country. The cabinet heartily approved all possible measures for the rescue and defense of Narvik and Trondheim. The troops which had been released from the Finnish project and the nucleus kept in hand for Narvik could soon be ready. They lacked aircraft, anti-aircraft guns, anti-tank guns, tanks, transport, and training. The whole of northern Norway was covered with snow to depths which none of our soldiers had ever seen, felt, or imagined. There were neither snowshoes nor skis, still less skiers. We must do our best. Thus began this ramshackle campaign.